The four-year mystery of Jessica Swanson's disappearance was solved last summer when Dale Jensen led authorities to her remains on a Goodhue County hillside. The dramatic developments closed a tragic chapter in Cannon Falls history. But for most people who live here, the case also leaves a simmering bitterness and sense of outrage. People are mad that law enforcement officials couldn't develop a strong case, that lawyers were successful in defending those who confessed their guilt, and that a judge could hand down a mere four-year jail sentence to someone who killed a three-year-old girl.
For 4 years after the initial incident, we were known as the town where the little girl disappeared and we couldn't find her.
Longtime Cannon Falls resident Ray Rapp owns an oil distribution business in town and was the volunteer fire chief. He responded to the missing child call on a hot, rainy June morning in 1996.
You kind of go outside of the outstate area and people say, I know Cannon Falls, that's the one that's been on TV looking for that little girl. So we were notorious for being not able to find the little girl that's been missing. Well, now we're known as the town that we solved the case, but the guy got off fairly easy with his sentence.
In addition to his disappointment with the court system and law enforcement, Rapp blames himself.
Just feeling bad that maybe we were failures in the fact that we couldn't find the girl. In a way, a little bit of a failure feeling there that we didn't find her when we should have.
Rapp organized the search in those early hours before the county and the FBI got involved. He had no way to know Jessica's body was hidden some 8 miles from town. Rapp, who has responded to numerous emergencies, still wonders whether he did enough to try to find her. Many others in Goodhue County with less tenuous connections to the crime also have difficulty shaking their sense of outrage. Lorraine Schuchart, a retired bank teller in Zumbrota, still finds it shocking that three suspected murderers, one in Cannon Falls, one in Moose Lake, and one in Brownsville, all confessed to police but argued later to retract their confessions.
I really was frustrated that suspected criminals seemed to be having more say about so many of the things, more than the victims and the victims' families, and I just got really annoyed with that.
Schuchart also wonders how Dale Jensen, who worked in her town, could let his neighbors continue searching for the girl he knew was dead.
Well, I guess I just was so angry with him for not admitting it sooner to make the law enforcement officials go through so much work and so many private people went searching for and so on. And I thought, doesn't he have a conscience?
People in town are still angry that the county's only full-time public defender, Mary Wingfield, did her job so well. Wingfield says she endured anonymous phone threats while defending Dale Jensen. She gained considerable legal leverage because an FBI interrogator had illegally denied Jensen's repeated requests for a lawyer. Wingfield wonders whether those so disturbed by Jensen's deception would rather she ignore her client's constitutional rights.
It's not a legal issue. It's a community issue, and I'm sure that's where the long-term frustration comes from this case, because there was a whole lot of emotional involvement, and that wasn't resolved probably satisfactorily for them.
There aren't many of Goodhue County's 43,000 residents who don't know the details of the Jessica Swanson case. Word spreads quickly, and Jensen and Jessica's mother, Michelle Swanson, were under intense scrutiny. The stuff of small-town gossip later became part of the criminal investigation. The couple never joined the search themselves and rarely checked with police for updates. Then they were spotted at a local fair just days after Jessica's disappearance. That seemed to remove any benefit of the doubt. Police didn't have the evidence to charge Dale Jensen and Michelle Swanson, but residents knew all they needed to cut all social ties. Ralph Weisheit is a professor of criminology at Illinois State University and an expert on rural crime. He says in places where people still wave to each other on the road, bad news can strike a heavy blow.
I think it more fundamentally shakes the community. Because, again, if I live in a very small town, part of my own identity is connected to the identity of the community. And when a really violent crime occurs, it shakes the very foundations of the community in a way that is simply not true in a large city.
In addition, Weisheit says small-town residents are less apt to air their concerns with people they don't know.
Rural areas in general don't like talking about their problems to other people. They don't like their community being painted as a place where there are problem behaviors and illegal activities going on, even if they fully are aware of those activities, they don't feel it's anyone else's business.
But some people are compelled to take the discussion past the kitchen table. David and Lynette Coors of New London returned from a vacation 4 years ago to find the inside of their house trashed. An antique china hutch and irreplaceable wedding gifts were smashed. The contents of the refrigerator and kitchen cupboards were thrown about. Senseless destruction that left no room untouched. They started meeting with neighbors and other victims of crimes and discovered widespread frustration.
Along with our anger, we could sense the anger of the community, and that we kept hearing people saying, well, this has got to stop, this has got to stop.
The Coors started reading through police investigations. They write down the license numbers of suspicious cars. They even follow around people they suspect of crimes. The Coors' personal attention to local criminal activity seems to border on vigilantism for some people, but it's mostly welcomed by residents here who worry crime is gaining momentum.
The one thing that really hit home for us when we were meeting with our groups and meeting with our people is that everybody was pointing fingers. They were saying, it's law enforcement. They're not doing their job. They're not arresting enough people. Then all of a sudden, it's the court. It's the judge who's letting them go. It's probation agents who aren't doing enough urine samples, aren't doing enough of supervising their people. It went all the way up to where somebody was blaming the governor. And that's where it kind of hit home to us, saying, now, wait a minute, all these positions is elected. They represent us. And as a community, if we are going to allow this to happen to our streets, that's our fault. We can't allow that.
A 13-year-old boy was convicted of trashing the Coors home. Two others the Coors suspect were involved were never charged. It's common, says criminologist Ralph Weisheit, for residents in rural areas to impose what he terms informal social control.
Whether that social control is a warm blanket that snuggles you or a blanket that is being held over you to suffocate you depends on your perspective. And it's common to find teenagers in small towns feeling suffocated. And as they get older, they come more and more to appreciate the very thing they found so annoying when they were young.
Weisheit says most of the people who don't embrace those social pressures simply move away. That may not apply as much anymore to Cannon Falls, where there are enough new residents so that not everyone knows everyone else. To remember Jessica Swanson, people are trying to raise enough money for a bronze memorial in the town's library. Leanne Ronning, a sculptor and 30-year resident of Welsh, just north of Cannon Falls, is working from a familiar picture of Jessica distributed when she first disappeared.
It was such a vision. I think if you see any photograph of any lost child, you know, Katie, or you'd recognize the people on the street if you saw them. Someone says lost, you burn that vision right into your head and you can't lose it.
The money for the sculpture still falls about $500 short. Ronning, who also works in a Lutheran social service center, understands that people here are more likely to be hurt at the hands of someone they know rather than fall victim to predatory strangers.
Never let it happen again. That's one of the community's big fights, I would say, is to make sure that abuse doesn't stay in the home. You want the abuse to go. You don't want it. You want it out of the community.
Rural crime is most often a quiet violence. Experts say in most cases afterwards, neighbors can point back to signs of trouble. The challenge for places like Cannon Falls and Moose Lake, Waseca and Halleck, is to grieve those who are gone and work to recognize the potential for harm before it erupts into violence again. Art Hughes, Minnesota Public Radio, Rochester.